Retronaut's latest patron-only episode tackles the topic of Nintendo Power, gaming's greatest ever propaganda rag. Joining us this episode is Stefan Rees, the curator of the Twitter account Art of Nintendo Power, who spent years tracking down rare exclusive creations used in the publication of Nintendo Power. In that time, he's also come into contact with the people who helped make the classic magazine back in the day, and has all kinds of interesting anecdotes and secrets to share. If you're interested in hearing the full episode, you can go to patreon.com/retronauts and support the show at the $5 per month or better level. In addition to giving you access to the full Art of Nintendo Power episode, you'll also gain access to our entire backlog of patron-exclusive content, including bi-weekly Friday episodes and weekly columns and mini-podcasts created by Diamond Fight. That's a lot of stuff for a very modest subscription. Retronauts is entirely community-funded, and your support helps keep the show going. So check us out again at patreon.com/retronauts. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the preview.
I am Stefan Rees, also known as Art of Nintendo Power on Twitter.
Yes, and you haven't been running that Twitter account very long, have you? I feel like it just started up a few months ago.
Yeah, I mean, if you like remove the quarantine time, then yes, it's just been a couple of months. But I started it sort of on a lark at work when I was bored, and then Frank Cifaldi retweeted me, and it exploded overnight. So that was awesome. Yeah, it's been a very wild ride, and that ramped up very, very quickly. And I'm super blessed that everyone is so receptive to my content. And I really enjoy showing things that people just don't really think about existing, especially now that print media is so rare. I think there's a swath of people who just, never pause to think about people actually drawing things for magazines.
Right. Well, I mean, this wasn't just a magazine. It was far more significant than that, just because of the timing and the pervasiveness of this publication. It was, according to a great oral history that Frank Cifaldi put together back in 2012 for Gamma Sutra, they don't have actual audit numbers because Nintendo Power did not run advertisements for a long time. So it's impossible to compare it to, something like National Geographic, because they don't have the actual audited numbers. But it's very easy to say that it was one of the most widely distributed, widely read publications in the late 80s. And it was entirely propaganda for the Nintendo Entertainment System, and then, of course, Game Boy, Super NES, and so on and so forth, and had a more than 20-year run. Of course, it waned in popularity over time, as Nintendo waned in popularity over time. But, even despite that, it was still just a massively influential publication that just held an enormous amount of space in our brains, like free rent, and really, I think, shaped a lot of people's tastes. It made people aware of games they might otherwise have missed out on. And it is, it's interesting to see how many ideas that first appeared in Nintendo Power, like thoughts about games, kind of spread, and how many of them have been contradicted in later years through sort of the conventional wisdom of the internet. Things like Zelda 2 and Castlevania 2 were highly lauded in the early days of Nintendo Power, but maybe not quite so beloved anymore because of things like angry video game nerds saying, "This is garbage!" and everyone saying why he's right. It's just a profoundly influential publication. And you, Stefan, have been trying to preserve it. And by preserve it, I don't mean put scans of it up on the Internet Archive, because that's already been done. Someone's already taken care of that. What you are doing is actually preserving the contents, the materials, the physical goods as they existed and were used as, photographic references and things like that. And that's much harder to achieve because, I'm sure you can speak on it, but, a magazine that's published and there's a million copies of, or 600,000 copies of, it's easy to get a hold of one of those. But a plasticine sculpture of Mega Man and Dr. Wily fighting, there's only one of those, and who knows what happened to it after the Nintendo Power cover shoot. So you've been kind of playing internet sleuth, and I suppose non-internet sleuth also, like snooping around in real life, not snooping, digging around in real
right.
life.
I'm just breaking into people's homes.
Stalking people, even.
Well, yeah. I mean, this does kind of... tie into the very recent Nintendo Giga Leak that we recently ran an episode on. And although I was not on that episode, I definitely have thoughts on the value of what was uncovered, and also some of the questionable nature of some of the things that have been leaked, like personal correspondences and things like that. But it is a reminder that content, you know, creative works and creative content that are created under a corporate banner will remain hidden under that corporate banner and never enter the public domain, you know, for like 90 years, unless the corporation that owns it says there's some monetary value in sharing some of this and piecemealing it out. But the actual, you know, the actual content, the source materials and things like that, those may never see the light of the day, because, you know, if you work with it and it's just something you do as part of your day job, you're just like, well, you know, that's another month's publication. It's done. Move it out of the way. We got to make room for the next one. But, you know, for the people who grew up with these magazines, grew up with these video games, there is, you know, a totemic power, I would say, to things like this. And I look at the recent Retrobit reissue of Metal Storm. And the bonus item in that collector's package, the reissue of the NES and Famicom game, was a small M308 Metal Gunner figurine. And it's not exactly the same as the figurine that appeared on Nintendo Power's cover to promote Metal Storm. But the guy who put that together, I you know, spoke to them about it, and they, just like me, loved the little model that showed up on the cover of Nintendo Power, and were like, we would love to have this in our collection, you know, in our reissue. And they actually asked with IRIM's headquarters, and, you know, asked around at Nintendo and said, do you know where this original model is that we can work from? And they said, we have no idea. And so they, you know, they came up with their own mold, a completely new sculpt for the figurine. But, you know, it does speak to the fact that this is a thing that we looked at and said, wow, that's really cool. It's evocative. It, like, it really kind of cements these abstract 8-bit graphics and makes them real. It gives them a material form. And that's really, it made an impression on us, our young brains. And looking back into the past, it's just fascinating to see those things brought into life. And so you are kind of living the Nintendo nerd of the late 80s and early 90s dream by actually acquiring these things. And I don't know, do you have plans for it beyond being a private collector? Do you see these going into a museum, or have you not thought that far ahead?
First of all, they should have just asked me if I knew where the model was. But
well, now we know.
Sadly, that model in particular, I do have a Polaroid of that model as it was being built, but it was mostly just a Gundam kit bash. If you look at the actual individual parts, it's just all off the rack parts from other Gundam.
Oh, cool.
Which is
really how every mech in the late 80s, early 90s from Japan was designed.
And if you look at a lot of those, so the Super C robot and the Dr. Wily ship, all those physical models, if you look at them, they're all, yes, there is a lot of polymer clay, but like alongside that is just a ton of just existing model pieces and hardware store pieces and stuff. Like, there's all sorts of plumbing parts on that Wily ship. The Super C model is a bunch of polystyrene stuck to a bunch of different Gundam kits. I mean, so they really did use a lot of pre-existing pieces. Unfortunately, the Gundam model that was built by the same artist that did most of the other polymer clay models did not survive. The other one the big one that I really wish survived was the Maniac Mansion. But that was, again, like, you know, 4 feet, 300 pounds of polymer clay. And it's like, at the time, so one of the things that makes it really challenging, I want to go back a little bit to what you had started to say about finding these things and those challenges. So one of the big challenges is that Nintendo Power wasn't really forthcoming with who, like, talent-wise, made these things, right? So there were some people who were credited in the magazine, but then other people either used pseudonyms, like most of the Japanese artists who used pseudonyms, or they were hidden behind, like, a company banner. Like, all of the covers were managed by a company called Griffiths Advertising. And so there's never any actual named, aside from, like, the first two covers, I think, actually named artists that did cover pieces. It's all done under the Griffiths Advertising banner. So finding these artists has been, like, I liken it to just sort of, like, pulling on a thread of, you know, from like a sweater and unraveling a sweater. You know, you find a lead, which leads to another lead, which leads to another lead, like finding the artist for the Wiley model, for instance, that was like five levels deep of just like meeting people before I even figured out who that was, right? So hunting these people down in a publication which is largely uncredited is really challenging. But then
so you're kind of the Weezer of video game magazine preservation.
Yeah, for sure. Totally.